Hello and welcome to this episode of The Aparo Effect, a blog broadcast that we do to share insights into all kinds of topics related to increasing the capacity of nonprofits to serve better, stronger, more, and with less risk. And today my guest is Donna Dunlap, who is the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters here in the Charlotte market. And I am really looking forward to talking to her about her career journey from for-profit space to a nonprofit space. And we're just going to have a conversation here. And hopefully by the end of this conversation, we will have provided some thoughts to inspire our nonprofit brethren, how to put best practices in place, and also to share with our corporate partners how there may be a little difference in how a nonprofit is run than you might expect. I know that both of us learned that when we stepped from the corporate world into the nonprofit world. So Donna and I have known each other for a long time, so I'm looking forward to this fireside chat without the fireside.
Good afternoon, Kim. How are you?
Good afternoon. I am really good, and I'm really glad you're here.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So let's start by asking you the question. Tell us who you are right now in your career journey and what it is that you do.
Okay. I'm the president and CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Carolinas. We cover Mecklenburg, Cabarrus, and York County, and we provide mentoring support to youth ages 5 all the way up to age 21 in a one-to-one mentoring relationships. And I can stop there, but there's a whole lot inside of the impact that we have on young people, but it's really focused on professionally supported mentoring relationships.
So just to give us a little more insight into that, how many students, individuals, young people do you serve in a calendar year?
Sure. We've been here for 51 years. We averaged this past year, 1,000 children. We're part of a national organization, one of 230 affiliates across the country, but we have to fund ourselves independently and follow certain guidelines and regulations. But we have two program models. One is site-based, where the mentor would go on site to spend time with the child, or the child might go to a work environment to be matched with mentors at a work environment, so they learn about different professions. And then the other is community-based. I'm a community-based big sister, and I have the opportunity where I spend time with my little, she's 12, and we do different things out in the community and help her with her developmental plan. So every child has a developmental plan.
Wow. Who develops those developmental plans?
We have case managers that check in with the parent child, as well as the volunteer on a regular basis, just to make sure that it's being productive and that they're continually making contact and that it's safe for the child. And then we also measure outcomes so that we can ensure that we're doing all the right things to support their trajectory for success.
Wow, that's amazing. How many people are on your team?
30 people are on the team.
And what's your operating budget? It's 21 questions, because we might as well know all of this because it's interesting.
Our operating budget's $2 million. That enables us to serve 1,000 children. We're trying to find a way to sustainably scale up. There are 50,000 children in the Mecklenburg County area that are living in poverty, single-parent household, and or have an incarcerated parent. And we want to scale up and be able to serve more children. 1,000 is great, but a city our size, we should be serving 3,000, 5,000. But we have to get sustainable funding, make sure that we can do that responsibly.
I get that. I totally understand that.
Right.
So before we move on to talking about our corporate backgrounds and how that has impacted where we are and what we've learned along the way, a question for you, because how have Aparo and Big Brothers Big Sisters connected here in the last couple of years? Is there a way? I got to put my own plug in.
Oh, absolutely. Put that plug in. I mean, I come from an IT background, so I have an appreciation for what Aparo offers nonprofits. And we had reached a point where we had already migrated to, laptop technology, thank goodness, because the pandemic on March 16th, 2020, we were able to pivot and walk out the door and not have to come back and kept all our employees safe. But really wanted to understand what more could we do from a technology standpoint to ensure that we had the right software, the right hardware. Was wanting to put the agency in a position to be more efficient, more productive. And it's a struggle for nonprofits. A lot of them don't think about that investment. They have so many other things to focus on in terms of operations. I had the insights to know that with technology, I can improve my operations. So it's an investment that we need to make. So we had Aparo do a study for us and make some recommendations. And we were very pleased. It was about a 3-month study. And we were really excited to have had that experience.
Well, I'm glad we could partner with you.
And shout out to Wells Fargo. they did all the work behind the scenes. So appreciate
exactly
all the
right. Mm-hmm. Yes, because Aparo comes in as a partner to both the corporate skilled volunteer facilitating the engagement with the nonprofit partner, also representing them in the equation, being a translator and facilitator in the middle. So thank you for that small commercial break. I do appreciate
it. And they were so committed and dedicated to helping us thrive through technology. So very excited to have had that experience. So thank you.
Great. That's great. So let's go back to tell us, you mentioned that you have an IT background. Tell us how your journey brought you to where you are today, running a very important social services organization in the greater Central Carolinas.
Well, I've worked many, many years, so I'll give you the abridged version. The majority of my career was with Xerox Corporation and Salesforce Management. The back end of it, I managed the federal government. I actually did 9/11 disaster recovery. I worked in Manhattan and New York City, had that experience, and just wanted to give back beyond board service. So after 30 some odd years, I said, I've climbed the corporate ladder. I've achieved all that I wanted to achieve. And so I spent about 8 months doing nonprofit pro bono consulting for nonprofits and found it very fulfilling, and knew that it wasn't paying the bills. So I actually went to work for Microsoft for a couple of years and still just wasn't excited. Even though I was on a lot of different boards, I said, this is where I get my passion and my purpose. And a headhunter that was helping us find a CEO for Girl Scouts, I was leading that committee, said, would you do a nonprofit C-level job? And I said, absolutely. And what made this opportunity so special is that my mom was a big sister. When I was a kid, I fostered to adopt my son as a single parent. So the majority of those we serve are single parents. And he was a high risk child. I mean, his birth mother didn't take good care of herself, and he was an at risk birth child. And I always wanted to help more children. He always wanted me to be all to himself. And so this was an opportunity to have 1,000 children without him being able to do anything about it. So I'm just really passionate about helping children that are considered at risk and don't have equal opportunities for success. And I run to work every day. I enjoy what I do and just want to be able to do more and reach more children and more families.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story. So is this your first job in the nonprofit space?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Great job.
It is. And it was an interesting transition.
I was going to ask you, tell me about the transition.
you're going from a high task corporate environment where everything needs to be done yesterday to a much slower, less resourced environment. People operating more with their hearts than being motivated by incentives and performance metrics. So we had to get to know each other to help the staff understand what changes we make, because I was brought in as a change agent, that the changes that we make will make their lives better and will help us better serve young people. So I just had to slow my pace down quite a bit. I definitely had a supportive board, which is critical, and really had to make sure I wasn't leaving people behind. I had to make sure I was bringing people along with me to ensure that they understood the mission and the vision. They understood what success really was and really getting their arms around, we can do more. One of the things that, you know, when I came in the door, we're just serving the child. We've done so much more and been able to serve the family. And because we have this connection through the child, often we're the first to know when there's a crisis. And so being able to refer them to different nonprofit resources with confidence has helped us not only help that child and the family, but also to help the whole family when they had difficult challenges that they were facing, especially during the pandemic.
What were some of the, I'm not going to call them strategic, I'm going to call them tactical elements that you initially put in place to achieve more efficiency? And how did that come about?
So the challenge for me was that I walked into a 65-page strategic plan document that was in place. I had to help the board understand that this isn't practical. What are the vital three things? And so really narrowing down the priorities, and I had to take some time to really assess, you know, what are those? What do we need to do? And once we had it down to a place where we had our vital three, it made it so much easier to move the organization along and keep it simple and have people have a sense of accomplishment. People, including the staff, as well as the board, and just feel really good about that. So we've stuck with that pattern of really just what are the three things we have to get done over the next 3 years, and not a 5-year plan and not a 64-page plan. It's like a 6-page plan, and it's much more efficient.
So I also made the transition from the corporate world into my first job at a nonprofit was the CEO of running a professional theater company in Chicago. And so I remember that first year. It was a kind of a crazy year adjusting. And one of the things you mentioned was about you had to slow down. And what I wanted to hopefully clarify, but you may not agree with me, so I just put this thought out there, is that when I think about slowing down for a nonprofit, it's not that the people and the work couldn't be faster, or because the people are the skills of the employee and the desire of the employee is to be efficient and to be effective and to move forward rapidly. It's because the resources aren't there. You don't have the technology tools. You may not even have the knowledge skills because you aren't paid at the same salary rate. So you maybe haven't gone through the same level of professional experience or educational experience to be in the role that you're in. So it's not for a lack of, I don't want people to leave having people think that it's because it's a lesser environment, but it's a different environment and the pace is intense. If you're moving, right. When people say to me, they want to retire and take my job, I have a job like mine in the nonprofit space, I'm often offended because I'm like, you think this job is easy peasy because we say slower, but it's not. And so I want you to elucidate on that, if you will.
Yeah, let me try to clarify that point, and very helpful, because there are people that, because of, you know, the amount we can afford in terms of manpower, there aren't enough resources to get everything done quickly. That's why we have just recently, our board made an investment in 6 more headcount this past year, because we knew we needed to increase our headcount to be more efficient. The challenge was that the staff wasn't used to, if you told me something in the morning, I wanted it fixed by the afternoon. That was one of the big differences. They just weren't used to that lightning speed, and you know, not having all the resources necessary to serve more children or to get this done quicker. We've done a lot of analysis in terms of what do we need to be more efficient? Do we need to raise the money first and then stand up a program? Or can we get the manpower to stand up a program and then go find the funding to bring it to the youth? Just working through all of that and just operating at a pace that we can support. But it is a challenge to get the talent. Like I said, they brought me in as a change agent. And I came in with a very strong business background, managing not only regional but national operations. I have my MBA. I took a huge pay cut, but I really wanted to give back, and that has helped them, just bringing that business acumen and teaching my folks, here's what a P&L looks like, here's what our financial situation looks like, so that they would be a part of the whole organization, the whole mission, and not tunnel vision on, well, I'm just doing this part of the mission. I really want them to understand the whole scope of our organization and how it's run.
And I want to hit 2 things on what you just said. One is that when I say I need something in the afternoon, it again isn't because they're not capable of doing it or because they don't want to. It's because they don't have the resources. Because in a big company, when you say I want this afternoon, there may be 5 people in that department who can support it and who can take the critical work of that person onto them so that that person can get the report. Whereas in this world, you know, sometimes I've had board members say to me, we'll just have this done. And I'm like, I don't have 3 people to do that. I have just me to do that. Or I have just this one person and I'm going to have to pull them off of delivering services in order to pull this together. And they also have never done it before, so it's probably going to take twice as long anyway. So
that's a good point. Yeah. So we have a working board. We have a working board, so they have to be on at least one committee to help us get things done. I mean, we didn't have PR. We had to get the resources to get a PR firm to help us. We had to get an HR firm to help us do certain things because we didn't have the expertise. And only recently did we have some funding to be able to do those things, but most nonprofits don't have those funding. When they look at the development team and having marketing and a grant writer and, you know, having someone that can go out and do donor stewardship, there's just not that breadth in most nonprofits to get it done. And so if they can leverage and use technology to do some of that work, it helps them be in a better position financially to support those they serve. One of the things I do personally is I'm also an adjunct professor at UNC. And I teach graduate level budget and budgeting and financial management for nonprofits, just to try to help that next generation of C-level leaders in the nonprofit space understand business, know when they're financially in trouble, know when they need to take action, know when they may need to cut back, and not trying to make them accountants, but just really help them understand the financials of running it like a business. And it used to not be appropriate for us to have a surplus. You'll never be able to do more things if you don't have surplus funding. So just getting their head around those types of things is exciting way for me to give back to the next generation of leaders.
Okay, so there's two more things now. I didn't get to the second one the last time, and so I'm holding it in my little, you know, over here in this hand, and now you've given me another one. Because when you talk about the importance of nonprofits being able to have a surplus, I mean, I am a bugaboo. This is a bugaboo for me. I don't like the term nonprofit. I like the term mission-focused organization, because the difference between a corporate partner and one who is traditionally called a nonprofit that I like to call mission-focused is a corporation is built for profit. And as a result, the people who are making them happy making decisions to say you're out because I don't like what you're doing are the shareholders. So they have to make money for the shareholders to increase their value in their stock. So it's a very different mission, a very different focus of what a company does. They make all decisions based on that shareholder value. And on the mission-focused side, nonprofit side, we make decisions based on the ability to deliver the mission and expand the mission. And in order to do that, in order to have staff who are motivated, who are challenged and want to be able to grow within the company, keeping them, which is really important, turnover is really hard on any company, we have to make quote-unquote profits, surpluses at the end of the year. If you look at the definition of profit, it is net income minus net expenses, and there's some leftover. Well, we have to make that in order to keep our businesses going so that our mission can continue to thrive. And so same outcomes, and I'm a big bugaboo on that. So there's my lecture for the day in this, and I'll leave it at that.
I appreciate that. No, you're right.
But absolutely. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, because I think it's a great takeaway for nonprofits and maybe for corporations too, but is that I have a similar view of the financials. And I find that being transparent with my team, educating them to why we're doing what we're doing related to strategically and bringing people in and reshaping jobs or pivoting how the service is going to be delivered is really helpful. Right. So talk a little bit more about that, the importance of that transparency and integrity around the financials for your whole team. Well, and would you have seen that in the corporate world? I don't know.
I did in managing a sales organization. I had to definitely do that, but We try to, with our team, help them understand core values for the organization and keep that in front of them. And whatever we do, we try to weave it back into the core values. And you touched upon some of them, just, you know, the honesty, integrity. And I shared earlier, bringing them along, making sure that we're not leaving people behind and they understand. But trust me, I don't give them a complicated income statement or P&L or anything like that. It's really simply, here's how much revenue we brought in. Here's the budget. Here's the gap. Here's the expense that we budgeted for. Here's our actual expenses. So we may have to tighten up. So just so that they understand, I always believe in telling people why something has to be done. Whenever we change any policies or procedures, I always make sure that they understand the why of it, just so that they feel like, okay, I'm a part of this. And we try to operate as a family. We really try to do that.
Yes, I think that's true. And so I'm going to have to yell to my producer here to say I didn't turn my timing thing on. So you'll need to send into chat when my time is up, because I don't know when, but I imagine we're closing in. So I want to ask you kind of at the high level, in your transition from corporate world to nonprofit world, are there any best practices, you know, two or three that you would highlight to say, these are the things really initial high level things I would encourage all nonprofit leaders to take away, or champions of nonprofits to make sure they're aware of?
I would just say that you need to have some basic business acumen in terms of how to run an operation, how to manage financials, and how to go out and generate revenue, you know, bringing that money to help it. So those are three, I'll keep it to three since we're running out of time, but those are important things for you to be most effective.
You can't deliver services if you can't pay to deliver the services with the things that you need to deliver. Yeah,
and as a leader, you have to always inspire a shared vision. So that's...
Mm-hmm. Donna, thank you so much for joining us today on the Aparo Effect. And we're grateful for you, for what you do in the community, and for what you've shared today related to uptooling for nonprofit leaders. We really appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.